So my topic today is, as clear as electroshock. And whenever I tell people that I'm talking about electroshock, whether I told people this in the 70s or in the 80s or in the 90s or today, I've almost always gotten from some people the exact same response. How come wasn't that discontinued years ago? Well, electroshock was not discontinued years ago. And no, it didn't almost disappear. There's approximately the same amount of shock given today that there was in 84 when the Ontario Coalition to Stop Electroshock was in its heyday. And there promises to be more because there is a huge push right now by shock doctors. But what you can hear is that shock doctors are lamenting the tragedy of insufficient shock being used. And so it's a very important thing for us to be on top of. So let me start by saying a little bit about shock. It's a fascist invention, and when I say that, I'm not talking metaphorically. Shock began in fascist Italy. It was invented in 1938 by a man called Cerletti, and Cerletti visited a slaughterhouse and saw pigs being pacified by the application of electrical prods to their heads, and he decided to try it on a human being. A homeless man, actually, was brought to the hospital against his will. And against his will, he was then used as a guinea pig. Cerletti, in the meantime, had invented a crude shock machine. And this man, who had never came there and didn't want to be there, was strapped down and electrodes were attached to his head, and he was given electroshock. After the first few shocks, he screamed, "Not another one, it's deadly." That was the beginning of this highly touted treatment. By 1940, it had already been introduced into the States, and by the early 40s, it had become a standard part of the psychiatric regimen. Shock today is not that much different than shock was in the 40s and 50s. The only major advance is the giving of muscle relaxants so the back wouldn't break. In the 80s, I was part of an organization that held 3 days of public hearings in which people who got shock came to testify. And the recurrent themes identified by the shock survivors were damage, terror, lack of safety, horrific memory loss. Many testified that they would prefer death to ever being subjected to this procedure again. All but two people who testified called for the complete abolition of electroshock. But I want to begin by introducing you to a definition, and I'm quoting here from a neurologist, a man called Sidney Samant. Samant says, and I quote, "As a neurologist and an electroencephalographer, I have seen many patients after ECT. ECT produces effects identical to those of head injury. Electroconvulsive therapy, in effect, may be defined as a controlled form of brain damage produced by electrical means." In electroshock, a person is given an anesthetic and a muscle relaxant, also oxygen because they stop breathing. Then the person's head is attached to a shock machine by virtue of two electrodes. The machine is turned on, and then 100 and 100 to 150 volts of electricity is passed through the brain. Generally, a course is 6 to 8 treatments. The amount must be sufficient to create a grand mal seizure, a convulsion, hence the name electroconvulsive therapy. Significantly, in real medicine, doctors try to stop others from having grand mal seizures, as they know this means brain damage, not with shock doctors. They try to produce it, and they do produce it. It creates lesions in the brain bleeds, cells disappear, ghost cells appear. Nowadays, psychiatrists are into denying that shock causes brain damage because they are confronted with a populist who, for some reason, is not so keen on brain damage. But they didn't bother denying it in the early days because there weren't any objections. And so it's very important to go to these early people because they actually were honest about what it did. The early shock doctors made it very clear that it is precisely the brain damage or intellectual impairment that makes this treatment, quote, therapeutic, unquote. Let me quote here from the second biggest name in the saga of electroshock, psychiatrist and electroshock mentor Dr. Abraham Myerson. Myerson said, and I quote, "These people have more intelligence than they can handle, and the reduction of intelligence is an important factor in the curative process," unquote. Along with brain damage comes enormous memory loss. It's not surprising there's memory loss. You put holes in people's head, it stands to reason that there's going to be memory loss. You rampantly destroy brain cells, and of course you're going to wipe out memory attached to those cells. Now, we know about memory loss from studies. There's umpteen studies that prove it. We know it from patient reports. Studies show that up to 90% of patients on ECT complain of ongoing memory loss. Of course, there are doctors who discount this evidence. In fact, many, many doctors, saying that the patients are imagining it and that these complaints are simply proof of ongoing neurosis. Significantly, an ECT review committee set up by the government in Ontario in the 80s to look into the shock clearly concluded memory loss. Let me quote here. ECT causes memory loss varying from minor and transient to severe and long-term. Actually, there's two kinds of memory loss created. There's retrograde amnesia, and that's loss of memory of things that happened prior to shock, and antegrade amnesia, that's inability to remember stuff that happens after shock. The ability to remember new things is impeded. I can't overstate what a serious impediment to a decent life this destruction of memory is, this menticide is. We need memory to navigate the world. You cannot even go into a grocery store and shop if you cannot rely on memory. As human beings, we can't make decisions without memory. When we make decisions, we not only project ourselves toward the future, we project ourselves back into the past so we can make effective selections of behavior that has served us in the past. We can't do that if we can't remember what we did in the past. We don't know what we like, what we are attached to, who we are. Memory is the foundation of our identity, and you interfere with memory and you profoundly interfere with the integral whole that is the human being. And significantly, that interference can be very, very major indeed. I want to say, as a therapist specializing in this, is I've seen people with 5 to 20 years wiped out. Some shock survivors have had all of their memory before shock wiped out. Illustrative of this in this regard is Linda McDonald. At 23, she was a young married woman with children. She was depressed from the duties that fall to young mothers. She was given electroshock, and she never again remembered any of her children, her husband, anyone. Even when memory loss is not that extensive, it still has profoundly interferes with people. I'd like to briefly quote from testimony with a shock survivor and a fellow activist Shirley Johnson gave to a meeting of the Toronto Board of Health. She said, and I quote, "The memory loss is especially painful, since I could not remember a lot of times when the children were growing up, the two younger girls more so, since the shocks were closer to their birth. The two older children, I do not remember their graduation. Many times my family and friends would bring up happenings that I had to question them about to test whether the memory would return. I feel so alien because of this damage. I used to cover up a lot of times, thinking if I listened more and rested a lot before going out, it would be easier. Finally, when the anxiety got so bad, I would completely avoid people, and especially social gatherings where I was supposed to know people and remember their names," unquote. I want you to imagine the devastation for women whose primary identities are mothers that cannot remember their various things that happened to their children. I also want to add, while we're on Shirley, that one of the last times Shirley was electroshocked in another ward in the same hospital, her son was being electroshocked. And her son was a musician, and it deprived him of his ability to remember music because you don't know what's going to go. And he killed himself. And so look at the devastation of shock on this family. Is there a way of predicting how much memory or what memory will go? No. A person could have 8 shock and have minimal damage. A person could have 1 shock and have horrendous damage. The point is, shooting electricity through someone's brain is a bit like letting a bull loose in a china shop. You know there's going to be havoc wreaked. You just don't know where and how much. Doctors themselves, I'd like to add, are really aware on some level that it creates memory loss. They have to be with all the proof. Indeed, in many cases, they are not only aware of the memory loss, despite denying or trivializing it, they are counting on memory loss. Shock is frequently used precisely to erase memory that is causing the person problems, and even more that's causing other people problems. And indeed, often the person feels a bit better, not always, but sometimes they do, because they no longer remember what's bothering them. The problem is, no one tells them what the treatment does and that they're going to be brain damaged for life. The problem is, people cannot solve problems when they can't remember them. We need our memory to work through issues. One of the tragedies of this so-called process is that people are left with no way of addressing what is bothering them because they cannot remember what is bothering them. And so they continue to be plagued. Imagine in this regard a childhood sexual abuse survivor whose memories are just beginning to surface, who gets depressed and confused and who is electroshocked, and you'll get some sense of how counterproductive this treatment is. I'd like to add that I've worked with a number of shock survivors who appear to have had something very traumatic happen in their childhood, but we can't get at it. Not because they've repressed it, but because the shock has made it inaccessible. Routinely, shock is used precisely to wipe out memory that causes the person trouble, and the person ends up severely impaired in their ability to navigate the world. This is routine and intentional use of shock to damage the brain. And what goes along with this, shock is sometimes given as a punishment or a threat both to women and men. In this regard, I'd like to remind people of the case of Cheryl Brown. Cheryl was sexually abused by her psychiatrist, Dr. Henry Fenigstein. Fenigstein threatened her with shock if she ever revealed it. Well, in this case, it was the psychiatrist whose interest was served, as it often is. It may be someone other than the psychiatrist whose interest the erasure of memory serves. Though I don't want to unduly emphasize this, I have certainly known many people who were shocked once they started suggesting the possibility of sexual abuse. And so one scenario that we sometimes see is the father sexually abuses the daughter. As the daughter grows up, she starts making accusations while acting in ways that others recognize or think of as strange, and the father signs for electroshock. There are also other common effects of shock, and it's a huge and frightening list, but I want to name a few. Confusion, physical weakness, cardiovascular complications, lower IQ, delirium, brainwave abnormalities, epilepsy, learning disabilities, and death. From what I've been saying to date, I'm sure that that you're getting a sense of why I'm saying this procedure is bad, like real bad. It's fraudulent, it's unacceptably injurious, and it's dehumanizing. It is essentially nothing but a medically induced closed head injury masquerading as treatment. And it seriously detracts from people's ability to lead a full life. You're also probably beginning to see why I am calling it a feminist issue. It controls women, it punishes women, it threatens women, it protects abuse of men. But you may be wondering why I keep saying women and why I am emphasizing that it is a feminist issue. So let me proceed now to who gets shock. In short, disproportionately, women get this abysmal treatment. Throughout the history of electroshock, women have received shock to 2 to 3 times as often as men. It is true in every country in the world in which shock is given, which is the vast majority of countries, but let's stick for a second to Ontario. This is the last stats that I have on overheads. So number of ECTs given provincially, 15,593. Number of patients, 2,554. The percentage of patients given ECT in provincial institutions that are women, 71%. Percentage of ECT given in provincial institutions given to women, 75%. In other words, 75% of the shock given in provincial institutions in Ontario is given to women. So you can see that's 3 times the amount given to men. So there's a huge discrepancy between women and men. Now, it's also given to vulnerable men, and I don't want to forget men here, especially men less valued in the patriarchy. In this regard, I'd like to point out something, and gay men living with AIDS are in particular jeopardy of ECT. Something horrible isn't happening here, but in all fairness, we need to ask if there's anything about psychiatry's claims to effectiveness. What's electroshock supposed to do? Relieve depression. What do effectiveness studies say? Brill did a controlled experiment with unmodified, modified, and simulated shock and showed that all three were just as effective. Simulated shock is where you don't do anything and they think they've had shock. Longitudinal studies by people like Johnston show that any greater effectiveness over a placebo disappears within 4 weeks. So, in other words, these guys are zapping women's brains, damaging women's brains, for 1 month of feeling high sometimes, and generally for nothing. There's one other claim to effectiveness that psychiatry keeps putting forward. The claim is it is effective in preventing suicide. What do the studies show? Control studies with some trouble, people getting shock and some not, and there was no difference in suicide rate among those who were shocked and those who weren't shocked. In other words, it has no effectiveness in preventing suicide. So what do we have here? We have an ineffective, brain-damaging treatment that destroys people's lives, and it is overwhelmingly given to women. Why is it given overwhelmingly to women? Well, let me back up here before I answer that and say, why is it given at all? I think there's a lot of answers to this. I don't want to just try one. I think one of the reasons psychiatrists give it is they don't know what to do. They're not good therapists. Their drugs are useless. And so they, you know, once all that happens, if the person doesn't start feeling well by themselves just from being away from their family, it comes to mind to electroshock them. It also feels right to some doctors. There's a long history of within psychiatry of treatments that border on torture. There's a long history of treatments purposely meant to scare people, and electroshock fits very well into those. It's quick. It's a cheap way to address people's suffering in a dehumanizing society without actually having to address the causes of suffering, and so the government wouldn't mind supporting that. I want to be clear, though, that shock is an industry. It's not just a treatment. And it's an industry with vested interests involved. There is a huge literature out there that normalizes and regulates shock. Shock doctors are raised in the philosophy of shock. Shock doctors are major shareholders in companies that sell shock machines. So this is a partial explanation, but it's still only a partial answer. So let me go back to the question. What do shock doctors say about the discrepancy? Why more women, 2 to 3 times as many women as men, are shocked? They rationalize it by reminding us it is intended for depression and that women are depressed 2 to 3 times as often as men. Let me acknowledge there's some validity in what they're saying here. Women are depressed more than men. We're depressed because we live in a sexist society. We're depressed because of battery. We're depressed because of relegation of women to second-class citizens. We're depressed because of social conditions. And it is these conditions that need to be changed, not our brains. In addition to that, as I've already indicated, it makes no sense shocking women for depression, for studies have proven that shock has no efficacy with depression. Well, despite the muddy thinking going on here, it does look like women's understandable emotional problems under the patriarchy is being pathologized, and that is a key reason why women are disproportionately shocked. Another salient answer, though it's not always the case, is that significant men in their lives have been known to push for, sometimes male partners. A more fundamental answer to why women in particular get electroshock is that psychiatry is a patriarchal institution, and what goes along with this, approximately 90% of shock doctors are men. And significant in this regard is how the patriarchy still regards women. Men do not understand women and easily see women as defective, especially women experiencing emotional difficulty. Also, they're more likely to see women as needing extreme measures, which translates into imposed control. Women are seen as invalid, as not in control of our emotions, as needing to be kept within strict limits. Men's inability to understand women and discomfort with feeling, in other words, is a contributive factor. Obviously, another answer, as I was suggesting earlier, is shock wipes out memory, and women have memory that is sometimes very inconvenient for the patriarchy. I'd also like to point out that many of the early promoters of ECT explicitly recommended shock for women and for, quote, men whose jobs did not require a lot of thinking, unquote. If we ask, who are those men whose jobs do not require a lot of thinking, it isn't a large step to realize that these early advocates of shock, at very least, had in mind working class men and men of color. Put this together, and what we have is the covering up of abuse, callousness toward women, profound disrespect for women, reduction of women to nothing but a pile of emotions which are, with a brain attached to them, which for the most part is in the way and you might want to reduce. We also see the standard infantilizing of women with all the players cast in the old roles. Men, and let me be clear on this, disproportionately white men, cast as competent parental father figure, women as child, cast as child. More generally, we see an attempt to control women, whether through memory loss, threat, punishment, terrorizing, or brainwashing. We see it generally, and we also see it in concrete cases. Ewan Cameron was particularly into control. Ewan Cameron was the psychiatrist at the infamous Allan Memorial Institute in Montreal. And he was responsible for rapid electroshock and psychic driving, a combination of two things, depatterning and psychic driving. Okay, depatterning was mainly the electroshock, so he gave people a number of electroshocks a day. The idea was that you wipe the mind clean. Now, these are his words, not mine. He wrote them up in journals, nice, respected psychiatric journals. You wipe the mind clean in order to create, quote, a tabula rasa, unquote. That is, a blank sheet on which to write. Once you did that, you can then do the psychic driving and implant the messages people should have. So women and men both were subjected to this combination of shock and implanted messages coming from the tapes underneath their pillows as they were forced to sleep all the time. Common messages for women were, you are a bad mother, you are a bad wife. Shock doctors are still trying to wipe out women's memories. And additionally, they're still trying to force women to be good mothers and wives. My example is a woman shocked in 1990 whose name is Wendy Funk. Wendy was bullied into accepting shock in the 90s, and what was wrong with her? She was tired and she had a sore throat and went to the doctor. And the doctor kept saying things like, you know, you really shouldn't work outside of the house. This is not fair to your husband and children. And she started crying, and then he said, well, you're obviously very upset. We need to put you in an institution. So she ended up in a psychiatric institution. And within a short time of being here, she was told she'd be relegated to the back wards if she didn't have shock, that she would consent to shock if she cared at all about her family. And she needed shock because she was not acting like a proper wife and was, and here's the word, quote, consumed with feminist-type thinking, unquote. It's not just wives and mothers, of course, that shock doctors try to control. I remind people here of the case of Sheila Gahuli. Sheila was a lesbian, and women are not supposed to be lesbians, for the patriarchy is nothing if not heterosexist. Sheila was given electroshock in the 1980s in BC for the unspeakable crime of being a lesbian. Significantly, after each shock, she was asked, do you still not want to be cured of being a lesbian? Put together the issue of control with profound damage, which we know shock does, and what we are seeing here is state-supported form of violence against women. Electroshock is electrical assault on the brains of women. It is battery to women's brains, and as in traditional battery, women are being told it is for their own good. In this battery, in this case, it's called treatment, and it is legitimated and paid for by the state. The signs of the battery are the signs we always find in violence against women. Actual physical damage from men attacking women's bodies, male threats, also one further dimension by which we have come to recognize full-blown violence against women, and that's the psychological aftermath. Let me quote some of the testimony from hearings held into shock. Quote, I never felt so helpless and vulnerable in all my life, unquote. Quote, I was helpless in stopping this kind of treatment, unquote. Quote, it's degrading, it's humiliating, unquote. I have combed through testimony by women shock survivors and can clearly identify the expectable and routine psychological effects of electroshock. They are sense of helplessness, low self-esteem, humiliation, terror, ongoing effort to please so as not to be punished further, also initial minimization, denial, attempt to hide the damage. Does it sound familiar? I have already named a number of standard features of trauma that pertain to shock, sense of danger, terror, low self-esteem. Just in case there's any doubt, I'd also like to name other attributes of trauma that you clearly find with shock survivors. Being haunted by it, having nightmares about it, re-experiencing it so the person feels it's happening to them all over again, so that it's happening now. Also, as in all trauma, women are frequently triggered by stuff that ends up associated with the traumatic event. For a number of shock survivors I know, they're triggered by anything electrical, by electric cords, by electrical outlets. What we have here is recognizable if we dare to recognize it. My invitation today is that we dare to recognize it, that we throw away garbage terms like treatment and therapy, that we reconceptualize electroshock as a serious form of violence against women, as the traumatizing of women, and that we mobilize against that violence just as we've mobilized against wife battery and childhood sexual abuse. The anti-psychiatry movement has been mobilizing against shock for decades, and that mobilization has always included some awareness of feminist issues. We have demonstrated, we've made innumerable deputations, we've held public hearings, but that movement can only get so far. The strategic need at this juncture is an alliance between feminist organizations and anti-psychiatry organizations. In the meantime, I'd like to at least have us find ways to safeguard women in special jeopardy. And don't get me wrong, I also would like to safeguard men in special jeopardy. So which women are in particular jeopardy? Obviously, all severely depressed women. However, one form of depression really jumps out at you as you start reading women's testimony about their own victimization. Just after giving birth, women experience a completely natural event that we all know about, postpartum depression. It is not a disease. It'll go away by itself. And for this completely natural occurrence that does not need to be treated, they are subjected to brain-damaging treatment. What other women are in special jeopardy? Women with so-called eating disorders, housewives, now there's a big category, lesbians, gay men living with AIDS. Let me go off women and just go on to people generally. It's not clear whether people of color are in more jeopardy, and we don't get it represented in the shock statistics, so they don't do the breakdown. We need the breakdown, given that the psychiatry is an institution which has a long, long history of racism. And I want to end with a discussion of the elderly. Just as shock is given disproportionately to women, shock is given disproportionately to the elderly. The disproportionate use of electroshock with the elderly is a comparatively new trend, but a very strong trend. One, of course, that fits right into the dominant approaches to the elderly, the warehousing, the drugging. What rationale do psychiatrists give for disproportionately shocking the elderly? That they have to use electroshock because the psychiatric drugs pose a problem for the elderly with heart problems. Let me be clear, I have absolutely no problem with psychiatrists not giving the elderly these horrible drugs. I have a major problem with them saying, let's shock them instead. The elderly may already be suffering from confusion from memory loss, and shock exacerbates this. Moreover, the more fragile the brain, the greater the risk that shock will result in extensive brain damage, and like every other part of our bodies, our brains are more fragile as we get older. On top of this, electroshock poses a danger to the heart. Given women are at special risk of electroshock and the elderly are at risk, of course, it only stands to reason that older women are in enormous jeopardy. Women over 60 get 52% of the electroshock given in Ontario. Women over 60. Obviously, in this sexist age of society, elderly women's brains are especially expendable. We now, again, are getting an answer to who these people are who have more intelligence than they can handle. That, I would suggest, is part of the answer. Depression as a result of societal neglect, as a result of societal ageism, societal sexism, is another. As women get older and past childbearing years, women's situation frequently worsens. Women are no longer needed in many arenas as they are not producing children, not raising children, and are no longer of that same service to the patriarchy. Additionally, in many cases, women, as they get older, get very poor. They have more objective troubles. Given this, it is not surprising that many older women are depressed. What is sad is that older women are then punished for that depression by being subjected to further damage, and yet that is expectable because for psychiatry, depression is a license to shock, the person being a woman is a license to shock, and the person being old is a license to shock. What compounds this problem? There is often now no one there to protect elderly women from being shocked, no one there to stand up for elderly women, and so older women are being shocked again and again and again. As feminists, let me suggest we take the shocking of women seniors very seriously. And that said, I'd like to end by inviting people to identify. Many of us, women and men both, are already seeing the effects of age on our brains. We forget names. Some of us forget appointments. I know I won't name any names. Appointments, that's a nuisance for us now. I ask you to imagine how very much worse things could get if you had 150 volts of electricity surging through your brains. Women are the caregivers in society. Women serve society. After this service, is this what women have to look forward to? Is this the reward? Is this acceptable or palatable to us? Thank you.